Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the fall season premiere of RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. That's right, we have a new name and a lot of excitement around here as we are broadcasting live every Thursday at 7 p.m. on RCN TV. The show is also available on demand. You can hear our podcast, and very soon after our initial airing on our live Thursday night show, we'll have The Morning Call show broadcast on The Morning Call Varsity webpage. So that's some exciting news, a lot more special surprises coming up over the next couple weeks. And of course, tonight, a lot of high school football talk, a lot of NFL football talk on tonight's program. Last but not least, in terms of the good news around here, we have a brand new co-host. You probably recognize him as he just embarked on his 34th year full-time at The Morning Call. Our new co-host in the number one chair, Mr. Keith Groler. Keith, welcome aboard.
You know, Chris, I did watch last week's show, which was available on The Morning Call site, mcall.com.
Yep.
And notice you have, you're younger than me, but you have a lot more gray hair than I do. Is that because of the previous guy who used to sit in
this chair?
I thought
we were going to be civil on this new show. Wait, what happened here?
No, is that because of the guy who used to sit here? Is that
No,
we miss that. And I look at great gentleman. You can still catch Joe on Friday nights.
And absolutely, each week.
I think he does a great job.
Yeah, well, you've been here many times before. We appreciate you being here every week and sliding over. By the way, you better like that chair because you're only getting one every 12 years. We're not going to buy new ones every week. All right, let's introduce our special guest on this premiere edition of RCN Sports Talk. One of the big surprises, and we'll have more of a Morning Call influence on the show as far as our panelists. And we have one of them here tonight, including the newest member, Mr. Lynn Worthy, joined by one of the more seasoned RCN broadcasters here. I didn't want to say older because I don't want to insult you and say gray hair like someone.
Well, I am the oldest guy here.
Yeah. Mr.
far.
Tony Coca. So, Lynn and Tony, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Lynn, it's your first time here on the show, too. So, if we could, we'll start with you and get your thoughts a little bit about your background and also what have your initial impressions have been of Lehigh Valley football the last few weeks.
Okay. Well, I come up here from Binghamton, New York, was the last place that I worked. Working for a newspaper there, and before that, I was there for about 5 years. And before that, I worked up in Massachusetts, where I grew up, near the Lowell, Massachusetts area, and worked there for about 5 years there as well. Working full time, doing sports, covered a lot of different things from, you know, high school to college to pro sports. Got to spend some time around an NBA championship team with the Celtics when I was in Massachusetts. And
you may not want to say that too loudly, especially with the Sixers revitalization going on here. But go ahead.
So I've been around a bunch of different places, and actually was born in Phillipsburg, just up the road.
Oh. So you'll be you're very familiar with the East and Phillipsburg game.
I'll be getting familiar.
He was just born, and then he moved out. He's been a great addition to our staff, and he's really taken to the Colonial League and done a great job with Colonial League football. Like Chris, I wanted to get, I didn't get to talk to you that much. We're so busy, but you're really enjoying yourself with that league so far?
Yeah, it's you know, I think we've talked about before just the different styles of play, the different, you know, you get a little bit of everything in the Colonial League. And as we were talking about before, just some of the atmospheres at the different schools and the type of, you know, environments they have with the excitement between the different the people in the town, the alumni, parents, all that sort of stuff. So it's, you know, it's been fun, and people definitely care about football. So.
Yes, they do. Tony, we'll start with you. I know you were off this past week, and I should have introduced you as RCN's premier golfer after your exploits last week down in Myrtle Beach. You did very well.
But I don't know about on the golf course. But there's some greenskeepers out there that are like, good, I don't have to aerate the course anymore. It's one of those deals. But I had a lot of fun. Yeah. I'm glad to be back, though.
Yeah, you missed last week's football action. But overall, it's kind of been a wild first few weeks of the high school football season.
Oh, no question. A lot of surprises. I think the biggest surprise in my estimation, I know we're going to talk about it, but obviously Mayes High School has Harold has that team moving in the right direction, and I didn't think he'd do it as quickly as he did it, but there it is. And hats off to Harold, and you know, we're going to have them next week, I think, against Freedom. We're going to have Emmaus and Freedom, I think, on the 30th of September, and I'm looking forward to seeing them play and seeing that surprise team. But all in all, there's been some exciting football games. The games that I've covered so far with Gary and Mike, the Bethlehem game, the Liberty game, the Easton games. I mean, some exciting football, and it's unpredictable right now.
Yeah. Keith and Linda, your thoughts on the first 4 weeks? It's hard to believe we're almost at the halfway point now.
Well, when we start in middle of August, it seems like, you know, before the cold weather hits, we're going to be done with this thing. But I agree with Tony. There's been a lot of interesting results. I think in the EPC South, you could throw a blanket over those top five or six teams. There's not much difference between a Parkland or an Easton, a Liberty and Freedom. Becca's right there as well. But I agree with him right now. The surprise has been Emmaus. They're throwing the football. They used to be ground and pound. They had two great backs, Davidson and then Boney, the last 2 years. And they're much more diversified than they've been. And he's brought a toughness there. And Tony can speak to this. Mm-hmm. Emmaus has always had that little bit soft underbelly. Even though they played that ground and pound, there was still that, when push come to shove, they couldn't get it done. I think that's may not change completely this year, but there's going to be a new attitude. I mean, Matt Seneca, tough kid in his own right, played some good football down at Central Catholic. Yep. Sam's a tough guy. He's the defensive coordinator. And I think Emmaus is going to have a change of mindset, a change of a philosophy. And they're going to be tough. I mean, in years past, they would have some big wins, but then they'd fade in the big games. We're going to see what they're all about this year as we get to some bigger games, starting with that Freedom game on the 30th.
Yeah, in the Colonial League, there's a big game this weekend. We're going to have that game live on Friday. Southern Lehigh and Saucon Valley, those are two of the best stories. Notre Dame's another great story. And even Bangor pulling off a win last week was kind of nice for the new coach.
Yeah, Bangor, that one was one that I didn't see coming. I definitely didn't see that one coming. I mean, you lose a coach the day before the game. They come out there, not only just come out there and win a game, but, I mean, Salisbury plays that triple option, which every coach I talk to, I mentioned triple option, and their eyes start rolling about, oh, you got to get ready for this now. I mean, so, and then they roll out there one day notice with a new coach and get a win. That's at home. I mean, that was a surprise, definitely. But the league itself, I feel like, has been, you know, coming into the league, you talk to the coaches, and they said, Saucon's going to be good again. They lost just about everybody who touched the football in some way last year on offense. If you threw the ball, carried the ball, or caught the ball, you're pretty much graduated. And they're still, you know, they just rolled up 55 points last week. And Notre Dame loses, you know, one of the best players, you know, that you're going to probably see here in a while in Trey Jordan. And plug in a sophomore transfer, and they're rolling right along. So, I mean, Colonial League has been interesting, and it's still going to get better because you still got a lot of those matchups to come. Mm-hmm. Like you get one this week, a couple weeks you're going to see, Northwestern still has to play some of these teams, and Northwestern's only got one loss so far. You still have obviously the Sauk and Notre Dame game doesn't come until October, so there's still a lot of stuff to sort of figure out, but it's going to be interesting from here on out.
Yeah, I think that might be the game of the year in the Colonial League, Week 9, Notre Dame taking on Sauk, and I think a lot of people forgot about the Panthers. They had such a great defense and such a great offensive and defensive line. Just about all those guys were back. So when they lost those names like Culver and the receivers and Hark and so forth, they forgot about how good they were on defense on the line, and all those guys came back.
Oh yeah, I talked to Cody Zerinsky last week about that, and he was pretty pointed about the idea that, you know, well, we lost these running backs and everybody thought we weren't going to be good, and he says, well, you need a line to get anywhere. You know? He said, flat, you need a line to get anywhere. And when a kid who's, you know, about 6'3", 6'4", 300 pounds says that, you listen.
Yeah, Tony was shaking his head pretty.
Oh, yeah, that's where you win and lose football games. Yeah. And when you have them all back in the, you know, I've probably got in trouble with this before, as Keith Jackson used to say, the big uglies are there. I mean, and they're playing football, and they start to pound on you a little bit. You plug in the backs, and if you have good athletes at skill position, you know, those big linemen are going to open the holes, and you're going to be very successful, and that's why Saucon's going
to
be there.
I wanted to ask Tony a little just about the six classification stuff and the fact that 32 out of 46 are going to make it. I know you had a show dedicated.
No, Tony and I talked about this before the show. Okay. He had some comments.
Okay. As a football coach, you went, you know, it used to be, look at, every week was like a playoff week. Yep. 10 weeks in a regular season, and every week felt like a playoff week because if you lost one, okay, you're in trouble. Lost two, you're almost out. Yep. And you lost three, you're definitely out. Now I'm looking at more of the bottom teams to see who's not going to make it. I mean, the playoffs have become a little bit different. Instead of for the truly good, they're for everybody but the truly bad. And you look at 6A right now, and there's 5 of 13 that are not going to make it. 4-0-4 at this point in time. Allen, Northampton, Pocono East, Pocono West. Nazareth, I would say Nazareth has one of the biggest games of this weekend. They're playing East Stroudsburg South. Why? Because if Nazareth loses to East Stroudsburg South, Tommy Falzone, who has done a wonderful job up there, is probably going to be out because he's got to play a lot more EPC South teams the rest of the way. This is an opportunity for him to maybe get back in the hunt at 2-3. It's a totally different way we're looking at things this year.
Yeah, I have my opinion on it. I don't know if I could really say a lot of the things that I want to say in the air, but I agree with you, Keith. You know, when I'm a dinosaur, so when I was coaching, you had four teams that were going to make it. You're battling your heart off every week trying to make sure that you're not losing that second game. Or if you lose the second game, where are you going to go? Now it's almost like ice hockey. You know, you can have a sub-500 team in a playoff winning possibly a District 11 championship. I'm not for it. I know it's like everybody gets a jacket, everybody gets a trophy type mentality that we have out there right now. But I really am. I'm really just annoyed at the way the process works. Now, bigger heads than mine. That's why I'm here, and I'm not sitting in another seat making decisions, because I don't have a dog brain, as I always say. You throw me a biscuit, I remember. But I just don't. I agree with you, Keith. I just think it just waters down the playoffs.
Well, they're going to tell you, and a lot of people are going to tell you, that the leagues are still very, very important. And you still got to win every week almost to stay in a league race, whether it's the EPC South, whether it's the EPC North or the Colonial League, or certainly the Schuylkill League. But I think nowadays we don't really care as much about the league races as we care about what's going to happen in November when we get into districts and beyond that, the state tournament. And I think everybody now, yeah, it's nice to put a banner up and say you're the EPC South champion. But we know now it's much more important to be a District 11 champion, whether it's 6A, 5A, 4A, whatever.
And one of the things that I think can happen too, let's suppose you're one of the teams that's in an automatic bid, and there are a couple divisions that have that, and let's say you sort of get the injury bug, you can sort of pull your kid and say, it doesn't matter if I win or lose this game, I'm out of the league race, I'm just going to play, now I'm going to play for the district title, because the district title is important. And so you may have a team that's, I'm just going to say, let's say a 500 team that wins a district title, and I just don't think that it has the same meaning as it used to
have. One division that, I mean, the one classification, it's a big problem. And I think if you put truth serum in, even the District 11 people, they don't like this. I mean, they'll put a happy face on it right now, and they have to. But you can't have a division like the 5A where everybody's in before they play a game. And that's, hopefully that'll change in the next cycle. But that's not a healthy situation when you know you're in. Yep. At least there's some elimination that is going on in the other five classifications.
Me? Go ahead. I'm sorry. Just one last thought. Sure. Me personally, if I was coaching, I'd want to play. I want to play up. I want to play the best. Because if you want to be the best, you got to play the best. And that, I think that's what you want. I think you challenge the kids that you have. And the programs in the East Penn, EPC South, they're all quality programs. So those kids, I think that if you talk to the kids, they say, I don't want to water my trophy down. I want to make sure I'm playing the best. But again, it is what it is. I think they should have sat for a year, taken a look at everything until they sort of did this. But I'm here. They're there.
Yeah. Earlier this afternoon, there was a press conference, too, featuring the hierarchy at District 11 to talk about the playoffs, and in particular going through the different sports. We're going to have some of that video and get these guys' comments on that coming up in just a few minutes. Right now it is time to unveil the RCN Sports Talk poll for this week. If you're new to the program, it is a little unique from any other poll that's out there. We have some media members and also some coaches participate in our poll each week. We don't tell you which coaches, so there's no bulletin board material, and we've been fortunate over the last 12 years to have a nice rotation of different people contributing to our poll to get a wide variety of opinions. More information on our poll each week available at the RCN TV website. But let me just read off this week's Big School 5 first, and then these guys can comment on them. Emmaus, no surprise, our number one team. I was a little surprised. We had only eight of our 11 voters gave them the first place nod. Parkland was second in our poll with 43 points, three first place votes, followed by Liberty with 34 points, Freedom with 24, and then Easton, our number five school, with 10 points. Whitehall was the only other team to get more than one vote. Keith, you did participate our first time with
and
you.
I voted Emmaus 1 because they're the only undefeated team, but I think there's still a lot of doubt about Emmaus. How good really are they? They did beat a Whitehall team that also has lost to Nazareth. They beat a Bethlehem Catholic team that is pretty good, but we don't really know how good they are because they've had a kind of a weak schedule to this point in time. So I think there's a lot of doubt, and we'll find out if Emmaus is truly a number one team when they start playing Freedom and Liberty and Parkland and Easton. I mean, those are going to be four major tests with them. And right now, hey, they're 4-0. hats off to them, hats off to Harold Faircloth. But there's, you know, I could see why the other three people did not go with the Green Hornets as their number one selection.
Yeah, in fairness to Mayes, you got to play who's on your schedule, but they had two Northern teams are very early in the schedule, two which they beat up on. Tony, your thoughts on our big schools this week?
No, you know what? I had a total
well,
brain
I knew you were off
on
a golf course, too.
I was on a golf course when I sent it in, and I forgot to put Emmaus down. And he sends me back. I'm like, oh, yeah, they're 4-0. I put them one and then slide everybody else down. And
I argue with you very often, but I said, well, you got to have Emmaus on your side.
I understand, and that was like, I was just like, I missed the putt, by the way. But when I was sending that in, like Keith said, they're undefeated. You have to give them the nod until they get knocked off. But those five teams, throw them in each week, and if they played each other, even White, put Whitehall in the mix, it could be, and it's a round robin. They could all end up with five losses and five wins. That's just the way that those five teams are, those six teams. Go ahead, Lynn. What do you think?
Well, I was going to say, you know, a couple weeks ago, I feel like that poll would have been completely different. And as the new guy, I'm looking at the, you know, the way things go in the EPC every week, and I'm like, is this how it goes every week? And whoever you think is going to be good might get knocked off, and whoever you think isn't really there is going to beat somebody and just sort of jump up. I mean, it seems like it's a little bit different with the smaller schools, but it's, you know, week to week, you got to, you know, you got to keep track of everything in the EPC, it seems like.
I think this is the first time in over two years we didn't have Parkland in the number one team, too. So maybe people voted for Parkland out of a habit. Let's get to the small schools real quickly, and then we'll run down the table here with these guys' thoughts. Our small school, the school's under 400 male enrollment. We have Saucon Valley getting the top spot. They had 7 first-place votes. A lot of discrepancies here. Some people had Saucon first. Some people had Saucon as low as 4th. Becca was 2nd with 36 overall votes. They had 2 first-place votes. 3rd was Notre Dame with 32 votes, edging out Central Catholic with 31 votes. We had 1 first-place vote for the Vikings, and then Northwestern was 5th in our poll with 8. Lynn, we'll start this time going around with you as a Colonial League expert, and of course we have Beck and Central in the mix there, but your thoughts on our small school poll.
Well, Saucon being at the top is sort of interesting to me just in terms of with as much change as they've had and some of the teams they've played. You know, they've played some of the smallest teams that, you know, haven't had great records. So I'm not sure where you really put them in terms of, like, how do you weigh, you know, like a win like last week where they put up 55 on Caddy and things like that. Like, I'm not sure how you weigh that against, you know, what Becca has played so far. At the same time, Notre Dame, you know, is looked really good, but they haven't played Saucon yet. They just a couple weeks ago beat Southern Lehigh, which was, you know, a team that was looked really good so far. So just the sort of the breakdown of where you've got first place votes for a team that's in, you know, third or fourth place in that poll, it sort of tells you that it's a little scattered, and just the fact that they're playing different competition, I think it makes it a little bit, I don't know if it's more fun or interesting. What do you want to call it? It makes it a mixed bag, I think.
Yeah. Keith and Tony, your thoughts on our small schools?
Well, it's the tradition in me, but I think I probably put Beck and Central 1 and 2. And I know that Saucon Valley did break through, and it was a great performance defensively by the Panthers in that District 11 3A semifinal last year. But by and large, you know, Central and Becca are just going to be lean, mean fighting machines when we get to November, and they're going to be well equipped for just about anything. Now, Saucon Valley, last year's Saucon Valley team did rise up, like I said, and really delivered an unbelievable performance.
You're not saying you're anti-Colonial League here.
No, I'm not. But I mean, look, I don't think the people in that league, and I know because we hear it all the time. We don't get enough respect from the media. Play in that league. Play Whitehall, play Easton, play Freedom, play Liberty. Play those people week to week to week. There's no, I hate to say that, I use a team, but there's no Salisbury or Bangor in there. And Salisbury and Bangor are great basketball programs, by the way. But when you're playing that, it's, you know, when you're playing that kind of competition, you know, it's a tough deal. You're going to get some losses. And I know that a team like Saucon Valley is going to run, but it's going to be a tough game for them if they play either Central or Becca come November. Because the EPC, when you're playing that kind of competition, it's going to make you better, unless you're beaten up and you have a lot of injuries.
Yeah. Lynn, remember not to go to Colonial League football schools with Keith.
Well, no, I just want to make sure people know who said that and who didn't say that, who didn't say that. They'll be waiting for you outside.
I'm sure they will be.
All right, we're going to take a break here. We're going to continue the high school football and then the NFL football conversations coming up in just a few minutes. Right now it's time to unveil our trivia question, though. and give you a chance to win tonight's special prize here. Keith, you have to give me a thumbs up or thumbs down if you like our trivia questions each week here. We're going to start with college football for this week, though. Which college football program has the highest percentage of time spent in the Associated Press's top 25 poll all time? We need the college football program that has spent the highest percentage of the time in the top 25. Probably a pretty good margin, too. A little surprised at the result of this. Not the answer, but how much they were over the next most seeded team in the AP college football poll. So again, one more time, which college football poll has the highest winning percentage of time spent in the AP's top 25 poll? Here's more information on how and what you can win.
Win a $10 gift certificate to use to see the latest movies and the hottest music, sports, and pay-per-view events on RCN On Demand. You can only win one gift certificate every 4 months. But if you haven't won a prize in the last 30 days, you may be able to win another great prize. Call or email us right now with your trivia response. Callers get priority. But if we don't get a caller with the correct answer during tonight's live sports talk show, we'll take all email responses and conduct a random drawing on our next live show to determine the winner. Watching the show on replay or VOD? Send us your guess now, and you just might win an RCN On Demand $10 certificate. Good luck with Sports Talk Trivia.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call, fall season premiere, and we're going to continue high school and NFL talk coming up in our next segment, but right now NFL talk is front and center as we bring in our special guest. You see him online at the Star Ledger. He's all over the place as the Giants NFL beat writer, James Cratch. Welcome to the program, James. Thanks for joining us this evening.
My pleasure. How are you?
Very good, good. Thanks for your valuable time this time of year covering the Giants. Josh Norman, Odell Beckham, I know you've been hearing about that and probably been asked about it quite a few times this week. They're squaring off after having a bit of history in recent years. What has been the talk lately from the Giants camp with Odell Beckham, and what are the Giants saying about that matchup with Josh Norman?
The Giants are doing everything they can to downplay that matchup and to downplay what happened last year. Obviously, when Norman was playing for the Panthers a year ago, Beckham and Norman basically spent three quarters brawling on the field before, you know, everybody kind of calmed down at the end when that became a really tight game down the stretch. Ben McAdoo, Beckham, Victor Cruz, anyone you talk to has said that's in the past. Beckham learned valuable lessons in that game. Obviously, he was suspended for a game for his actions in that contest last year. And they're not going to play into the hype. They're not going to give any bulletin board material. They're just going to focus on playing football and the task at hand, which is, they hope, improving to 3-0, dropping the Redskins to 0-3. So the Giants want no part of playing into the hype, but, of course, there's going to be hype. And until we actually get to Sunday and they're on the field together for the first time since December, I don't think anyone really knows what's going to happen.
Now, Josh Norman, of course, he's been kind of saying some things that haven't made him real popular around the league, but really through the first 2 weeks, he's done a nice job matched up against the opponent's number one receiver. Do you think it's just going to be the Giants are going to send Beckham against Norman, and that's what they're going to reciprocate, and the two will just stay together the whole game, or might Beckham line up in a slot? Because the Giants, I think, have more playmakers than what the Redskins have seen the last couple weeks with Cruz and Shepard and so forth. So do you think they might move Beckham around and line him up in different spots?
I think they will. I mean, they do that every week. I don't think the Giants are particularly concerned about who Norman is on, because the way they look at it, as you mentioned, they've got Odell Beckham, they have Victor Cruz, they have Sterling Shepard, you know, they have Shane Vereen coming out of the backfield, they have Larry Donnell and Will Ty at tight end. They're not really fixated. I mean, if Norman is on Beckham, so be it for them. I don't think they're going to purposely try to keep Beckham away from Norman. I think you'll see him in a slot, but move him around, but they always do that. I think they feel comfortable with all three of their receivers being matched up against Norman.
James, I just wanted to get your take on the difference between Ben McAdoo and Tom Coughlin in terms of tenor, in terms of atmosphere. What are some of the changes that you're noticing around that locker room and around that camp?
You know, I think a lot of people seem to think that Ben is very similar to Tom, and there are similarities, but the thing that I take away from is, you know, Ben's his own man, and there's a tremendous amount of energy around the team this year. And I think part of that has to do with, look, you know, I started covering the Giants right before training camp last year. And the energy around that team wasn't great from the start because I think people looked at the roster, looked at the schedule, and thought it's going to be very hard for this team to make the playoffs. If they don't make the playoffs, Tom's probably not going to be the head coach here anymore. They kind of went up and down. It was a roller coaster, but that's the point they got to. But with all the money in free agency, with the good draft, and I just think Ben is a very he's a very confident guy. You know, he espouses this belief. You know, he's the one who came out and said, not us, the media. He said, we're trying to win the Super Bowl year one. Like, he's not afraid to say that. There's a tremendous amount more energy around the team. They seem to, and obviously the 2-0 starters help, but it's more a lively vibe, I think, than what they had under Coughlin. A lot of things are similar, but there are a lot of things that have changed.
Eli Manning, you know, we see him on the commercials all the time with his brother Peyton, but look, he's been a two-time Super Bowl champion, and yet you feel like he hasn't played great football the last couple of years. How's he doing so far, and how is he adjusting to McAdoo now as the head coach and no longer being the offensive coordinator?
It's been smooth transition for Eli. He'll tell you that. I mean, Eli's going to his third year in McAdoo's offense, and I think, you know, we saw it in the preseason. It's now carried over for the first two regular games. He's in complete control of this offense. I mean, I think you got to wonder, what would life have been like, what would his career have turned out like in terms of statistics and regular season success if he had been in this offense from the start? I think the West Coast offense fits Eli incredibly well. And one of the key stats I'm looking for this year is, how many interceptions does he have at the end of the year? He has one through two games, and that one was because Sterling Shepard ran the wrong route. Eli's a guy who the past 2 years he's had 14 interceptions. His career average is about 16 a year. He's a guy who's tended to turn the ball over a little bit, you know, over the years. But if he can beat 10 or below interceptions this year, I think it will show you that, one, he's in complete control of the offense, and two, I think he would be in very good shape to have his career year this season.
James, the Giants started off 2-0, which I know New York fans are thrilled about, but they're having trouble scoring touchdowns and holding on to the football, which you don't often see from 2-0 teams. How big of those are concerns, do you think, for the Giants coaching staff, and do you think they can overcome that in the next couple weeks when they start playing some tougher teams?
I think it's definitely a concern. Another thing, they haven't had a takeaway on defense, so they're winning. They're 2-0 in a kind of unorthodox manner. I mean, some things are, you know, conventional, like in the past, which is starting to come together. They've had the run game going more against Dallas than New Orleans, but they've gotten, you know, the run game going when they need to. They've made big plays at the end of the game. I think ball security is definitely something. I think it's something that may frustrate McAdoo the most, because, you know, every day, the first session, you know, first period of practice, calls the Duke after the football, you know, which was named after Wellington Mara. They work on ball security every position. They've even got offensive linemen working on ball security. So that's something McAdoo takes very seriously. I think it bugs him that they haven't protected the football recently. And I think that's definitely something they have to fix. You're right, because after this game on Sunday against the Redskins, they got to go at Minnesota, at Green Bay. They're going to Baltimore at home. They're going to London to face the Rams. They've got a tough stretch of games coming up. So you're right, they're going to have to protect the football, and they're going to have to start cashing in these opportunities to score touchdowns. You know, they were able to score a couple of touchdowns offensively against the Cowboys. Only one last week against the Saints. They had a fourth down, you know, down the goal line. It didn't work out. They've had some turnovers. They have to start putting more points up on the board, but they know that. And I think that they feel that they're close enough that if they just fine-tune everything, that'll start to happen.
James, how do you assess the Giants working against the run on defense? Because I know Washington, the people there, have said that they really want to try to establish the run this week. Last week, they were almost 90-10 passing the ball to running the ball. So they really want to try to get the ground game going this week. How do you think New York will respond? And do you think Washington could have success running the ball against the Giants this weekend?
I mean, they always could have success, but that Giants run defense is really stout at this point. You've got Damon Harrison and Jonathan Hankins in the middle. Harrison, of course, the Giants just signed to a big deal. He's been everything they've expected. Hankins is going into his contract year. He's playing for his big payday this coming offseason. And, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul and Olivier Vernon, the defensive ends, you know, people think of them as pass rushers, guys who are going to be sack threats, get to the quarterback. They're both, in my opinion, plus run defenders, Vernon especially. So their front four is built to shut down the run. They've done that so far this year. And, I think the Redskins have to establish the run. And the Giants defenders have said it, that they feel if they can take away the run, that's going to make Kirk Cousins one-dimensional. Mm-hmm. And when they do that in the past, they've had a lot of success against them. Cousins has thrown 8 interceptions in 4 games against the Giants in his career. So their goal is going to be to shut down the run. As you said, the Redskins, I think they're 3-1 on the year past the run. They're going to have to establish it, but I really don't know if they can do that.
Yeah, you mentioned Kirk Cousins. Has there been much talk about him? Because I know in the Washington region there's a lot of, not a lot of discontent, but there's rumors about some anonymous players making comments they're unhappy with Kirk Cousins. Did you see any glitches or anything that the Giants secondary will be able to pick apart and keep Kirk struggling a little bit this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Giants, they respect Cousins. They think he's a very good player. He was sensational against them last year in Landover when that game, you know, that was kind of the point where, you know, the Giants had everything going for them in terms of the division. When they went to a Thanksgiving weekend, when they went down to Washington, they lost that game. That started a tailspin, and Cousins played really well against them there. But I think it goes back to the Giants feel that if they can take away the run and make Cousins take shots downfield, they have a track record of getting the ball off of him. I think that's their goal. They think he's a good quarterback. They also think they can force him into mistakes.
James, before we let you go, I know you had a great article a few weeks ago featuring offensive coordinator Mike Sullivan, who played and coached at Army and has some very strong feelings about the Colin Kaepernick protests. And there were reports the last couple of days that the players might do something or protest this weekend. And both the head coach and Coach Sullivan have come out against hoping that the players don't do anything. Any thought you have on the statements that Coach Sullivan has made to you recently, or any type of protest that the Giants players might do this weekend?
We talked to Rashad Jennings, who's kind of the team leader. Definitely a team leader, but he's sort of taken, you know, a leading role in this situation. He doesn't expect the Giants to do anything in terms of a demonstration with an anthem on Sunday. He feels, you know, as Ben McAdoo feels, that it's an important message that they're trying to bring awareness to and trying to deliver to their community. But he feels that if they were to do something during the national anthem, people would focus on the anthem and they wouldn't necessarily focus on the message they were trying to convey. So he even said he thinks that it would be detrimental to their desire to spread awareness if they do something with the anthem on Sunday. He expects all 53 Giants to be standing as they have been the first 2 weeks. Now, obviously, he even said this, you know, there's 53 players. Every player has his freedom. He's his own man, his own thinking. He can't speak for everybody, but his understanding and my understanding and belief is that you will not see the Giants do any sort of demonstration on Sunday. As for Mike Sullivan, you know, he feels very passionate about it, and I think that he made it very clear that why he feels people should stand. I think with a lot of these guys, they'll say that they understand what Colin Kaepernick is saying, and they, you know, some of them think he's the way he's protesting or going about conveying his message is wrong. Others say that's not what I would do, but I support, you know, it's his decision, his freedom. So on the whole, I think the Giants are extremely understanding about this. And I think, you know, the Giants from Ben McAdoo on down, they want to make a difference. I just think early in the week there was maybe some confliction about how to best do it. But All indications are that the team will not do anything on Sunday with the anthem, and they're going to look to do something outside of the national anthem, which is what Ben McAdoo and Rashad Jennings have kind of said they were hoping to do from the start.
All right. Thank you very much, James, for joining us, and best of luck with your coverage of the Giants-Redskins game coming up this Sunday.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
All right. Great job again by James Kretsch joining us, Giants beat writer for the Star-Ledger, and you can also check him out various sites online. All right, it is time in our program where the co-host takes center stage and gets a sound off on anything and everything that he would like to talk about going on in the world of sports. We do have a name change this week. There was much debate on what we're going to call this part of the show, but we ended up with the name of Growler's Grumbling. So, Keith, take...
Does this have to be negative or
You can say whatever you want. Ask the custom. I will not say anything during
I'm
the co-host
segment.
I'm
going to use this as my... every week, I think, or at least the weeks I'm here, as a little bit of a pet peeve segment, a little bit. Pet peeve number one is when you have an event, don't call the morning call to ask for coverage the day of the event or even a day before the event. We are mapped out. We are spread thin. We need a much advanced notice if you want. Don't say, hey, something going on down the street. Morning call would be interested in covering. No, we're not. Okay. All due respect. Same thing. I am a writer. I am not a photographer. Please don't ask me for pictures. That's another pet peeve of mine. You want to deal, we have a service. Find that right number, call the morning call, get that photo. There's a two pet peeves right there. On a positive side, I want to salute a young lady that Tony Coca is well aware of. He coached her this past spring at Nazareth High School. Tony Ann Hahn. I wrote a story about this young lady the other day, and battling lymphoma, Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is the better if you're going to have non-Hodgkin's or Hodgkin's. There's a higher percentage of full recovery with the Hodgkin's. This is a tremendous young lady. Her father just recently has been battling cancer. Then he has a heart attack. The sister, Paige, who Tony could speak to as well. Paige, I think a very talented player, suffered an ACL. Her grandfather recently passed away in August. And yet, this is a young lady who says, bring it on. I'm going to do whatever I can. She had her career at Rochester University put on hold. I think the world of her as a softball player, but I even think of more of her as a person, was holding that family together. You talk about adversity. The great thing about sports is we could find a way to fight through adversity. If we pull together, we work hard, all that good stuff. And Tony Ann Hahn, Nazareth High softball player, coached by the one and only Tony Coca. She is an inspiration. And Tony, I want you to speak to this because she's a fine, really super young lady who is going through a lot. But I tell you what, if anybody is going to destroy cancer, it's going to be her.
I'll be honest with you, Keith, I wouldn't have even known she had it all year. I mean, every now and then she'd come to me and say, Coach, I'm a little tired, a little bit this, and we just took it as a high school kid. But what a fantastic young lady. It was my pleasure to coach her for this year. Never complained. Went out there every day and just did it. And she was the glue that sort of held our team together. My first year, I'm coming in. People are telling me all about the Nazareth people. I tell you what, they couldn't have been nicer, and she was the catalyst there. I wish her the best. Paige is recovering. We'll be back on the field in the next couple of weeks. The family's fantastic. Mother's the head of the Booster Club. Dad's been fantastic. Keith, tremendous article. Brought tears to my eyes when I read it because I know the kid. And Tony, hang in there, babe.
Yeah, well, she's fantastic. And one more quick thing, and related to cancer, like I said, I'm going to try to use these grumblings as positive things. Freedom and Emmaus, again, we talk about rivalries and going against each other. We have some great rivalries, which are really the foundation of high school athletics. It makes it so interesting, so compelling. But Freedom and Emmaus are getting together, and their football game on September 30th, they're going to use that as an outlet to raise money for pediatric cancer. There's T-shirts, there's goodies, and all this kind of stuff that you can buy to fight pediatric cancer. And I want to commend both the Freedom High School and Emmaus High School Athletic Departments for doing this, these two schools coming together to fight pediatric cancer.
Just for the record, I want to call his segment Worthy's World. So, you know, I've lost. He has more pull than I do. All right, it's time for our high school football DC game of the week. So let's check in with highlights from last week's game. Here's our DKN Sports Minute.
This is the DKN Sports Minute. The 1-1 Roosevelt Rough Riders paid a visit to the 0-2 Anacostia Indians. The Rough Riders were looking to go a game ahead in the Stripes division, while Anacostia was still in search of its first win. Late in the first quarter, Roosevelt scores on a 15-yard pitch and catch from quarterback Leon Gray to wide receiver Andre Whitehead. Roosevelt goes up 7-0. Quarterback Leon Gray fakes the handoff, hustles 10 yards, and crashes over the goal line. Point after good, the Rough Riders are up 14-0. Anacostia tried to get out of the blocks, but struggled. Standing in the shadow of his own end zone, number 5, Darius Waters, goes big on a 20-yard pass, but it's picked off by defensive back number 2, Dylan Clary. He takes the ball back the other way for a pick 6. Roosevelt pulls away, leading 21-0. After a turnover on downs, Roosevelt marches down to the Anacostia 8-yard line. QB Leon Gray rolls out to his right and hits his favorite target again, number 8 wide receiver Andre Whitehead. Roosevelt paints a goose egg on Anacostia, 35-0. This has been the DKN Sports Minute.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk. Next week's Growler's Grumblings will feature a review of the hot musical, The Sound of Music. So we're talking about that during
the break. I was a presenter at the Freddie Awards.
I know. I thought you were going to work that in here. Let's get to a couple emails. We got the press conference from District 11 and our roundtable topics all coming up. We'll hit a couple of the emails here. Chris from Bethlehem wants to know our thoughts on Whitehall's offense. Well, they won last week, so obviously things are going well, but I think it was more of an issue of turnovers the last couple of weeks, especially in their loss to Nazareth. I think they had six turnovers and a punt return for a touchdown, so I don't think there's any major changes offensively that have to be done at Whitehall.
Oh, they're up-tempo, that's for sure, yeah. And they seem to have a guy that would be with Zach Gilbert who can handle it. I don't know, Tony. I mean, I've seen them once, and they did not play well, especially defensively against Emmaus, the game I saw. But what is your take on his Fs?
I think Brian's an excellent coach. I think the offense, I couldn't run that offense personally because I don't understand all the wigwags and all the pictures that they hold up and stuff like that. But I think Brian's an excellent coach. I think they're young in a lot of spots. And what happens is that in the beginning, that youngness shows up. Now, once the we're in the fifth week. That's like unbelievable. Now I used to say to my kids, you're not rookies anymore. You're veterans. Now you don't make these stupid mistakes. No one can call us young. And I think what the writer's asking is that, yes, it's a good offense, and it works for high school kids. It's just a matter that they got to stay within themselves. If they start to go out of themselves, that's when you get in trouble.
Emmaus is even faster tempo than Whitehall. They just run up to the line of scrimmage. As a writer, I wish more people would be like the old Tony Coca school, huddle up a little bit and talking about it, because I'm telling you what, it's fast-paced football.
And more time for the color announcers, too, to talk.
Right, exactly. The silent reporters. If you blink, you're going to miss a play.
Nothing wrong with 25 seconds. In fact, I think you ought to make it 40 seconds in high school like they do in college and the pros.
All right, one more email here. I got to go to Andy Weaver, your first show here. Andy says, what's your Nazareth prediction? He says Nazareth's going to beat East Stroudsburg South 48-24, and also please share that the Nazareth golf team went 15-0 this year. Andy signs his email, president of the Tony Coca fan club.
What happened to me?
I
I've been pushed aside.
We needed
a
definitive answer. Who is his?
By the way,
Weaver
was on time tonight. By the way, and he's always concerned about my arrival time.
You were here 6 hours early. I can vouch.
That's right. All about four.
Nazareth prediction: East Stroudsburg South. Anyone?
I think Nazareth has a great chance to win the game. East Stroudsburg South has struggled defensively. They have a really good quarterback named Jake Cirillo. They have a pretty good running back named Jared Pope, but they have struggled. They have struggled to stop people, and I think Tom Falzone, I said they're playing with desperation. This game means a heck of a lot more to Nazareth than it does to East Stroudsburg South, which knows it's going to be in the playoffs. I mean, it's a much more desperate 1-3 for Nazareth than it is 1-3 for the Caps. I like Nazareth to win this game.
All right, we teased it earlier today. The District 11 officials, Bob Hartman, Jason Zimmerman, and Tom Mole in particular, got together to talk about the new classifications, how that affects the playoffs. And we have some of the comments involving football, basketball, and baseball, and some general comments as well. Let's give a listen.
Our big change in classifications as we expanded was to make sure that we were able to fill playoff brackets. So we have changed our method of qualification, or enhanced, let's say, our method of qualification into the District 11 playoffs. There are three ways to qualify. In the past, there were two ways to qualify. 500 or better record in either league record or overall record, or winning your league championship. Okay. We've enhanced that just one more step, and we've added a factor that says there's a minimum number of qualifiers in each sport.
We are going to be playing our championships at neutral sites, okay, this year. Again, just the final championship round, we are going to play at neutral sites. We're in the process of securing RFQs from our local schools, colleges, etc., to determine where those games will be hosted. It will be a game time decision, if you will. We'll look at, obviously, the financial impact it will have on District 11 and obviously putting those games in the best possible venue that we can afford. Some may ask, what happens if we get to a Freedom-Liberty final? To me, that's still a neutral field, even though both schools use BSAD as their home field. There's no advantage there, so we consider that neutral.
The pigtails will begin as they have on that Tuesday. And pretty much the tournament is going to go from that Tuesday to the following Saturday, with the only day off being the Sunday. So we're sort of like Wimbledon. It's going to be obviously a drastic change, playing games on Mondays and Thursdays and games all over the place.
One of the big national moves in baseball is the pitching rule, pitch count rule. In the past, and this is definitely a link to sports medicine here, in the past, Federation rule was innings for pitch count, or not pitch count, for pitch restrictions was based on innings, not number of pitches. On October 5th, our board, PIAA Board of Directors, will revisit on a first reading the new pitch count rule, and it, in essence, will be based on every 25 pitches. So 0 to 25 would be no days rest, 26 to 50, it's one day rest, 51 to 75, 2 days rest, 76 to 100, 3 days rest.
Week one. All right, and a few more notes that we didn't have time for. The baseball games, baseball championships last few years up until last season was played at Coca-Cola Park. That is not in the plans. It is not in the plans for this year. There's no plans for having the baseball championships for districts at Coca-Cola Park again, nor the wrestling matches. There was a thought about getting them to play at the PPL Center in Allentown. That will not happen this year. They're still hopeful that might happen. And the doubleheaders. There's been talk about doubleheaders for football championships at sites. They will not be back-to-back doubleheaders. They will be split. They'll have one early in the afternoon and then one in the evening, so it won't be like you can go pay for one and watch two games. But I think the big news out of that is that there's an expansion of the number of requirements. You don't have to necessarily finish at 500 anymore to make the district playoffs. We're going to take a quick break and be back with more of tonight's RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call right after this timeout. Quick reminder, still looking for a correct answer for a trivia question. Which college football program has the highest percentage of time spent in the Associated Press's Top 25 poll? You can email your responses to us at rcnsportstalk@rcn.com. If we have multiple winners, we'll have a drawing on next week's show. So if you're watching us online on the Morning Call's Varsity webpage, listening to our podcast, or watching us on demand, you can weigh in here with your guess. rcnsportstalk@rcn.com is the email address, and we'll announce a winner if we get a correct answer on next week's show. All right, let's jump right to our roundtable topics, a mix of local and national topics that we close up each show with. What is your stance on pregame national anthem protests? It's been in the news quite a bit. Lynn, we'll start with you.
I mean, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, I know there's a lot of people have a lot of different things they want to say in terms of, you know, whether you shouldn't do it, it's disrespectful. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. Especially if it causes people to have different discussions and have different, you know, to shed light on some things. I mean, I immediately think about, you know, stuff that's going on in Charlotte because I have family down there. And I know there's going to be a game this weekend that's down there, and I'm wondering what that's going to be like. There's a state of emergency, and just some of the things you see going on in different places. If this in some way gets the ball rolling, get people looking at things that maybe they wouldn't have paid attention to before, if it gets people talking about things, considering things, then I'm all for that.
Tony, how about you?
I taught history for 35 years, and I know what the Constitution says. It's a constitutional right. I also have a son in the military, so I'm sort of caught in between. I think the thing that bothered me the most is I was talking off air. I go to my grandson's football game, and there's two 10-year-old kids, and I don't think they ever understand. If you understand what you're doing, and you're going to do it, and you're doing it in the way it's supposed to be done, and again, I commend the NFL players for the way they're handling it. They're not handling, making it like a craziness. When it trickles down, that's the hardest part for me, is that when it trickles down, I hope the parents are explaining to those kids what this is all about. That it's just not, oh, I'm emulating somebody from the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Keith?
Oh, really quick, I don't like it in the sense that I look for sports for unity. I look for sports to it doesn't matter. I root for the St. Louis Cardinals, and they have probably like four or five different nationalities on their club, and I'm a Cardinal fan. I don't care what. And so I look for sports to provide unity, not to acerbate division. I'm saddened by what's going on in Charlotte. I'm saddened by what went on with Trayvon Martin. I'm saddened by we need to come together. I don't know that not standing for the national anthem is going to solve the problems we have in this country. One good thing real quick, more people at games that I'm going to, when they announce the national anthem, they step right up there. A lot of people do, and I think before they considered it a nuisance, and now there's a lot more fervency when it comes to, well, I'm going to show I'm patriotic and I'm going to stand for the national. That's probably a good thing. But no, I don't like politics and sports mixing like this. I don't.
I think one nice thing too is the teams, especially with the Eagles and the Giants, as we heard, they're kind of getting together. They're talking about things they can do away from the national anthem. So maybe if they're not protesting the anthem, they are getting together and trying to further the cause. So I mean, whether you agree with Colin Kaepernick's initial stance, it seems like now we're finally getting something done.
I do like Seattle, what Seattle did opening day. I know it was 9/11, and they have to really, you know, be unified there. But the whole Seahawks team, arm in arm, that's the way I like my sports. I like people unified.
All right, let's quickly go to topic number two here before we run out of time here. How on board the Wentz wagon are you? The Philly fans, some of them are saying Super Bowl, here we go. Others are saying they haven't played anyone. You just discount the first 2 weeks. So, Tony, how on board the Wentz wagon are you?
I got a foot on it because I like what I see. I really do think that he handles the game well. Now, it was the Browns. It was the Bears. Don't get me wrong. But it's still the NFL. And the difference in playing level is going to be minute. I think a lot of times in the NFL, the bad teams and the good teams, there's the talent levels there. I like what I see with the kid. He reminds me a little bit. What I'm watching his actions, a little bit of a young Peyton Manning. I'll let you know a little bit more after the Pittsburgh game. I think the kid has something. Coming out of a 1AA program, I like what I see with the kid, but it's a long-learned project.
Liam, we only have 30 seconds. So go ahead.
Well, as a Giants fan, I'm on board because he's a rookie, and to me that's fresh meat. That's what that is. That's fresh meat. He's going to make mistakes sooner or later, so hopefully the Giants are the ones taking advantage of that. But the fact that he's done what he's done, coming out of the program and he's done that, has been impressive. It's still early, though.
Keith, final 10
seconds.
I'm
in there. I'm in there with him. I like this kid a lot. I think he's going to eventually lead Philly to somewhere special.
All right. That'll do it for our initial episode of RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. We'll be back next week with more fun topics. And, of course, Keith Groller now joining us on the co-host. Don't forget to watch us online, hear our podcast, and join us next Thursday live at 7 right here on RCN TV. For everyone at RCN, I'm Chris Michael. Good night, everyone.